You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla DeRoche. And today we will be doing a little retrospective on the march that just happened this weekend. We have a couple of people connecting with us today. We have Marissa Collar-Williams, who's on the phone right now. And we have Brianna as well. We hear also Marissa's dog, who will be joining us.
I know, sorry.
That's totally cool. The more the merrier, right?
Right.
So, who wants to explain a little bit about what this march is all about for those people who maybe haven't heard of what was happening this weekend? Why don't we start with Marissa, since she's called in anyway.
Okay, so the Women's March originally started as a protest, but it morphed into something much bigger than that. People getting together to support those who feel that they are unequal to others around the world. It blossomed into something that was worldwide and intercontinental, and it didn't necessarily, it was different for everyone. You know, every person that showed up had a different reason for being there. Every community had a different reason for organizing, and it all came together, and the catalyst was the protest, but not everything that happened was related to or inspired by the current administration. It turned into more of just us standing together and next to each other as people.
Right, and it actually started with Brianna, if I'm correct. You want to comment on that, Brianna?
Yeah, I started it. I talked to the Anchorage office who was coordinating the march over there and then found out what we needed to do to get started here in Kodiak. And it was a pretty simple process. And at the time, there were 5 marches across the state, and I think the last number I saw was 17 and about 10,000 people statewide that marched. It, I think the core of the march is the idea that women's rights are human rights, and it just branched out from there. And a lot of people were marching for themselves. They were marching for others. They weren't, there were definitely people out there that don't feel like they are losing any rights, or there's been, I've noticed some backlash about that. And it's okay, I think, for people to say, you know what, I'm out here and I'm white and I'm privileged and no rights are being taken away from me and I'm pretty grateful and thankful for where I'm at and what I have, but I'm still out here marching because my neighbor is not privileged like me. Or, you know, whether it's your literal neighbor next door or your neighbor, your fellow citizen thousands of miles away, there, you know, we're all in this together and we're all neighbors per se.
Could you both talk a little bit about what motivated you to get involved in the organizing of this march? Why don't we start with Brianna?
For me, it's definitely the last election cycle and the results of the election. I was really disheartened that it was so easy for someone to bash women, bash people with disabilities, bash people with different religious beliefs, different skin color. And I find it a bit scary that it's so easy to throw those words out there and then we say, oh, it's okay, and we justify it. And I'm a mother of 3, and here we are in schools telling our kids, don't be bullies, don't do this, don't do that. And we can only teach our kids so much. They learn from actions. They learn from what they see. And we just showed them that everything we teach them not to do, it's okay to actually do that. And it's not okay. And that really pushed me to say, hey, we need to figure out something, because I know I'm not the only one that thinks it's not okay. There's a lot of us, obviously, over 4 million that think it's not okay.
Was it intimidating organizing such a controversial march in a small town?
I honestly didn't. I wasn't sure what to expect. I didn't so much think about the controversy. I knew that that we could easily get some backlash from it, and we really pushed the nonpartisan, and we had people show up from both sides of the aisle, and that's what we wanted, because it's not a Democratic or Republican ideal to think that people should have equal rights or think that we shouldn't bully people, that I think people come from all walks of life that believe in those same things. But I wasn't really sure what to expect, and the response we got on the event on Facebook, I was hoping we'd have about 50 to 75 people show up, and figured 100 at the most based on how many people were saying they were going to come. And instead, I think we got probably we have 335 signatures, but I know not everyone signed in, so I would say we easily had 350 and maybe even close to 400 people show up, which was incredible.
It was a massive turnout. Just being there on such a long line, it was kind of amazing because we were going down that main stretch, and we just had so many people. I don't think I've ever seen such a large group of people in our town before, certainly not in a march form. I think that cars were just surprised. People were passing by and pretty amazed at what was going on in the street. Marissa, could you speak a little bit about some of your reasons for getting involved as an organizer and how you felt about the turnout?
Yeah, I got involved because I thought as an opportunity for us as a community to get together and talk about some of our issues and really hold ourselves accountable for the things that we've been saying and the things that we want to achieve and really how to go about it. I think that we should be really proud as a community that we were able to come together and that 350-ish people showed up to say, I see you and I'm here for you. And that went beyond the people with signs. It went beyond the people who were marching. I mean, even the police department came out and helped us out and blocked the road a little bit so it was safe for us to march. And I think that speaks volumes about the intention of our march and that we were peaceful and that it was just as much about visibility and being seen here locally as it was nationally.
And I noticed that some people did decide to leave more towards the end, so the crowd that we started off with was not the same size as the crowd that we ended up with. You were talking when we were just talking before the march, you said that there might be a couple of shortcuts. So what ended up happening with the route?
We actually,
Brianna,
sorry.
No, go ahead. I was going to say you should speak to that.
We actually had to change the route that we had initially. We had needed to stay on the city roads. And so rather, the original route did have two shortcuts, whereas the route that we ended up walking on, which was more or less the same as the Crab Festival Parade, we just told people if they wanted to, if it was too long, just to feel free to turn around at any point and head back, because we followed Mill Bay down to Bartell and then just returned the same way back to the library. And then we also had some time in between the end of the march before the speakers. And so I think some people with younger kids didn't stay for the whole time. But we also had some people show up that weren't able to make the march that came for the speakers.
Yeah. I think we were actually pretty fortuitous with the weather because we had that snow on Friday, and it was still pretty fluffy and stickable, so you could put your foot down and not slip on it. And today we've had this ice that is back to the old slippery surface. In fact, that's why you can't get to the station, right, Marissa?
Yep, I cannot get out of my driveway right now. Waiting on some gravel, so.
Yeah, so, we were really lucky, I think, to have the conditions that we did. And could you speak a little bit about the people who stepped up to speak at the library?
Sure. We worked together to find a diverse group of people that represented different parts of our community, ran in different circles, and we asked them all to be apolitical, to really just talk to our people about being people together on an island and how you can be strong and make this place better for you and for those who stand next to you, and to think about things through the lens of equality and everybody starting and finishing on the same level.
Right. And among my friend group, at least, I think one of the main reasons people chose not to attend was this pro-life, pro-choice dividing issue. But we did have a couple of people there who were very vocal on their opinions and were pro-life and attended despite some of the controversy surrounding the national movement and the kind of sponsorship issues that there were with pro-life organizations. Do you want to say anything on that?
I can say something. I think that that was one of the things that got misconstrued about the march, is that a lot of people thought it was either an anti-Trump march or a pro-choice march. And there were certainly people out there marching for women's reproductive rights, and there were also people out there who are pro-life that were also marching. They were just marching for different reasons. And I think that says a lot about our march. And I know that other marches across the nation were the same, where it was inclusive. It was for everybody, and everyone marched. You weren't marching for one single reason other than the idea that women's rights are human rights. But on a smaller, branching out from there was just many other reasons people were marching. And we really pushed that and really wanted people to understand that there was a lot more to it than just, it wasn't just black and white.
Right. And you pulled this, you guys, all three of you, Sarah Harrington as well, pulled this march together within 10 days, you said?
Correct.
Yeah. So what was that like, making sure that all the details were straight in such a short notice kind of space of time?
It definitely felt like a full-time job for about 10 days. excuse me. It was a lot of texting and messaging and meeting for lunch and just getting together and fine-tuning everything. And, you know, it started out where, oh, let's do the march, and then, oh, what if we got speakers? What if we could live stream? And ideas just kept coming, and it just really came together really smoothly, and it all panned out. And the speakers that we asked to join us they all jumped on board, and it was really exciting to see the people be so receptive to the whole process and the idea of it.
What's the next step, if not for the march or for the people who are involved, but for both of you?
We've created a Facebook group called Rise Up Kodiak, and I feel like right now that's what I would consider our next step. We've asked people who are in the march if they would like to join, to use it as a space to share different things we can do, calls to action to our senators or representatives, stay up to date on what's going on with Congress, also locally, volunteer opportunities, nonprofit organizations, local government, local boards to get on. And there's been a lot coming through there already just in the past few days. And I think this march has really inspired people to say, hey, I can make a difference. I can do something. And just to understand, you know, we can get on Facebook. We can use social media to spew out whatever we want, to bash things, to praise things, but it's in the long run not going to make a difference. But actually getting out in your community is the first step if anyone wants to see change happen. So right now we're using that group to hopefully get people out, and ourselves included.
What are your thoughts, Marissa?
Yeah, I definitely agree 100% with that. That is one of the best outcomes from this, is showing people the value of interacting face-to-face. And I think that's one of the things that I am equally proud of and equally disappointed in that's happened after the march, is that, you know, there are so many misunderstandings, but this is a community where you can easily reach out to somebody who's organizing an event like this and just say, hey, I'm pro-life. Can I come to this thing? Or, hey, I'm pro-life. Like, why are you guys excluding us? And that could have been clarified really easily. But instead, we thought we were looking at the big picture by looking at the local news and what they were saying. But really, the big picture is that we live in a very isolated place, in a very small community, and this was an attempt for us to work together and see how we can address the injustices in front of us. So I'm hoping that if
we as organizers or we as marchers or those who did not march learn anything from this, it's that we really need to work hard to participate side by side with people we agree with and disagree with, and to communicate and clarify in person or at least in a one-on-one scenario instead of ganging up on each other or perpetuating things that may or may not be true, and we can fact check locally very, very easily.
Right. And it's unknown whether this might be a reaction to the Women's March, but there will be a pro-life march on Saturday. So hopefully KMXT can get an interview with some organizer from that and see what that is all about. And I don't have any more details about it at this moment. I think it's kind of similar in that they're kind of organizing it within a few days before the event. So it could be like a moment-by-moment, day-by-day kind of organization. Before we close up the interview, we're gonna actually be moving on to a refuge topic and talking with a young person soon. But is there anything else you guys want to say before we let you continue with your days?
I'd just like to say thank you to everybody that came out and participated. It was incredibly powerful and incredibly inspiring to see so many people and just all together and unified in this idea that we can come together, we can move forward, we believe in equal rights. And I got a lot of hugs and a lot of thank yous that day, and they really meant a lot. And also thank you to the police department. It was really impressive. Mm-hmm. We were not expecting them to close down the road, and we also weren't expecting 350 people to march down the road together. So we were just incredibly grateful for that as well, and the library for hosting all of us, because, again, we told them we probably would have around 75 people, and they opened their doors to us, and I'm just really grateful for how well everything went and for the turnout and for the coming together of so many in the community.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we can organize these things all we want, but if nobody shows up, they don't make a difference. So I really appreciate that people took the time out of their Saturday to come out and talk to each other. I also think that one thing we didn't talk about is the symbolism of the library, and that that building itself was a grassroots effort, and the power of that is so amazing, and to have community leaders and I don't know, just our friends and neighbors come out and speak and talk about those kinds of the potential for us to work together and achieve those sorts of things was a beautiful thing right there in front of that fireplace. And I'm really proud of what we've accomplished, and I hope that more positive things continue to come out of this.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today, Brianna for coming in and Marissa for calling in. So thank you, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So now we'll be transitioning to talking with one of two Kodiak teens who's actually traveling to Anchorage, I believe, to take part in something called the Alaska Forum on the Environment, and that'll be in February. They're going to be talking about what they're doing at the refuge, I believe. So we have Nia Priestess with us today, and also Shelley Lawson from the refuge, one of the staff members. So, Shelley, have you been involved with the refuge's teen programs or community programs?
Yes, I have. My job at the refuge is working in the education department, and I work with youth and help coordinate and lead programs like Salmon Camp and the Youth Conservation Corps for teens. So with others at the refuge, we have a variety of programs, so I get to work with students of all ages, actually, from like pre-K all the way on up to young adults in college.
All right. And could you talk a little, Nia, right? Nia,
yes. Lisa. Hi.
Yeah? Could you speak a little bit about your involvement at the refuge? And why don't you just give us the whole narrative there from beginning to now?
Well, I was in salmon camp. I was a salmon camper in elementary school. And then when I got too old to actually be in the salmon camp program, I was a I was kind of an assistant. I was the youth leader at Salmon Camp, so I was helping out the little kids every summer with different age groups. And I also help out with the fun program, which is for 3 to 5 year olds, and the wild program, which is for 6 to 12 year olds during the summer as well.
Do you have a favorite age group, or like, not to say the other age groups are not amazing, but do you have one that you in particular like to work with?
Oh, I don't know. The little kids are so sweet because they want to hold your hand and they're so cute, but the older kids definitely understand a lot more, and you can really get into different topics with them and teach them new things. That's interesting.
How old are you now?
I'm 16.
16? So what is that, like 10th? Grade?
Yeah, 10th grade.
Yes, all right. I have not forgotten all of my high school experience yet, I guess. And do you have a favorite topic in high school?
I don't know. I really like choir, which has nothing to do with the refuge except for singing the salmon song, I guess. But I want to go into environmental education or tourism, so
awesome.
Hoping to take some classes related to that at some point.
And there's nothing wrong with having choir be your favorite. You're a well-rounded individual, as my mother used to tell me when I would do something that wasn't in my favorite area as a teen. So could you speak a little bit about your experience? How long have you worked at the refuge?
Well, I actually I've had lived in Kodiak, and then I was off island for a while living in other parts of the state. And I came back in 2008 and went to the refuge and started volunteering. In 2008, and in 2009, I was a seasonal park ranger, and in 2010, I got the position I'm in now. So I've been there for a little while, and...
Yeah, what are you saying? If you can't mouth things, you can just say into the mic.
So I've been working with the refuge, and I had a few different jobs there, and it's a lot of fun, and I really like to look for opportunities to get teens off the island because I think it really builds a lot of leadership and confidence to get them speaking to different people, and it's just kind of exciting to get off the island and meet other people. So I always look for opportunities to do that, and I applied to the Alaska Formal Environment this year to see if we could bring up some teens to participate and possibly present at the forum, and they selected our program, and so they're actually funding us bringing the teens up, and they're going to be, and Joshua Barnes will be joining us as well. He couldn't make it here today for the interview, but he'll be with us in Anchorage as well, and they'll be presenting and sharing information about Salmon Camp and about what their role has been in helping lead and mentor programs at the refuge. And then in addition to presenting, they're going to participate in like this youth leadership event that's happening over the weekend up in Anchorage, and meeting a lot of other young people from all over the state that will be there also sharing their stories as well.
Something that I've really liked about while talking with you about this is that a lot of the kids kind of emerge from Salmon Camp and get involved in the counseling aspect. I think that's what you might have been – I'm not a good lip reader, but I think that's what you might have been asking me off mic before, like, what was your original question? And it regarded that my original question was actually, how many students have you seen return to Salmon Camp as more adult individuals?
Yeah, that's something that we really like to try to do. When I first came here and started working at the refuge, I remember, it might have been Nia, I remember a young person came in and asked if they could volunteer, and I just remember having an experience myself at a different position that young people had been turned away because they didn't have anything for them to do, and I thought it was really sad. So I let myself try to find, if somebody wants to help out, if a young person wants to be involved, to find a way that they can be involved. And Nia was pretty young when she first came forward and said she wanted to volunteer at the refuge, and we connected her with working with the FUN program, which is Families Understanding Nature for preschool students. And so she's been helping for that program for years now, and that's when she was still a salmon camper, I'm pretty sure. And then after she aged out of camp, yeah, she came back as one of our Kodiak Refuge Youth Leaders, and that's something I created too, to have another stepping stone as students aged out of camp, that they could be still involved and a part of our program. And we've had a lot of students that, not all of the helpers at camp were campers themselves. Some just found out about it and came on, or were new to town and joined a camp and had never been a camper. But most of them were campers themselves. And then we've actually had some students continue on after that and join our Youth Conservation Corps program, which is a paid program for high school students. And we've actually had students who then went on to college, come back and work as seasonal rangers in paid positions while they were on their, you know, summer break from college. And so that's just so rewarding to be able to have them continue their involvement and see them grow in the way that they can lead and be leaders in different ways as they get more experience.
Yeah, and I think I've actually gotten to meet some of the people who have come to be seasonal employees.
Yeah.
I believe that, I'm not sure this is true for all of them, but they may spend some of their time in the more remote areas of the island. And then...
It depends on the job they get, but yeah, I believe you met Annalise Zimmer,
yeah.
And she was a former salmon camper who then was a youth leader volunteer, then became a YCC student, and then came back as a crew leader, paid position. So her job that she had, she did go out in the field with teens, doing work remotely out in the field, as well as working here in town, too.
That's so great, because for teens here and for kids of every age, there's an opportunity to come back and do more of what you're enjoying as a kid. And then that kind of connects you into higher education, and you can continue with that and then during college. So that's a really great opportunity. Do you have any consideration of doing that, coming back for your summers?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. That is definitely in my plans. I want to come back and be a salmon camper. Well, not like a salmon camper, but maybe be the director or one of the interns. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nia's so dedicated to all the volunteering that she does at the refuge. When I have asked her she's going to apply to be Youth Conservation Corps, which is our summer paid job for high school students, she hadn't applied yet. And then this last year, I asked her again if she was considering applying, and she told me the reason why she hadn't applied is because she really likes volunteering for salmon camp and for the Families Understanding Nature program. And if she was working, she thought she would miss out on those opportunities. So she's very dedicated to her volunteer work, and I did tell her that she could still help out with those problems. And the YCC crew did actually have a part in helping with Seaman Camp and leading programs like the Seaman Camp pop-up, and they spent time with Seaman Camp this year as well. So she could get paid to do it.
That's gold. So, Nia, you are going to Anchorage in February?
Yes.
Yeah, what date in February?
It's the 4th.
3rd we'll be heading out.
And then the conference is the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th.
Very cool. So we only have a couple of more minutes, but what do you think what are the main points you'll cover?
Definitely salmon camp and what we're trying to teach the kids, what we hope the kids will learn. Just trying to teach them about our island here and how they can get involved, how they can learn more about Kodiak. Just trying to give them the same experience that like we all had when we went to those programs, salmon camp and stuff, trying to teach them all the things we learn, trying to give them all the same wonderful experiences and show that to other people around the state, share teaching methods, show what we do.
They're even
going to
do a craft so the participants can make a salmon hat. We had a meeting and the teens came up with the plan for their presentation, and I think that it's going to be very well received because people spend a lot of time watching PowerPoints and they're going to bring a whole different experience to the conference.
Right. All right, well, it looks like that's all the time we have for our show today. It is almost 1 p.m., so thank you both for joining us. We really appreciate hearing about your experiences, Nia, and you guiding them.
Great,
Shelley.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.